The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
Did you see on the forum the picture they posted of me and you, Adam?
Yes. Stupid.
Was it Ben Affleck?
Because they like actually met.
It was Ben Affleck and Henry Cavill, who is actually handsomer than Ben Affleck, and they made me Henry Cavill.
I don't know. It's pretty close. That's that was a handsome off.
That was
pretty close.
It's kind of hilarious.
You think that Ben Affleck can match Henry Cavill? Is it Cavill? Kenville? Cavill?
No, there's no way.
No, I don't think he can. No. In that picture, though, I think they look close.
Yeah, because I think
he makes
an older.
What's his face makes up for his physique? He's got a better physique. Superman has a much better physique.
Yeah, you guys are silly.
Why?
Yeah. I should have picked like the ultimate handsome guy. Damn it.
Yeah, you fucked up. Yeah. What are you gonna do?
Yeah.
But then I said, oh, we'd make beautiful babies, and someone's like, who would be the one to get pregnant? Adam.
Well. He's got childbearing hips.
I don't know, dude.
He's got that fat ass.
I got an extra 30 pounds on you. Yeah. I don't know if you got the say in that.
Bro.
Shift, really, just push it out.
I'm the one that did jiu-jitsu for 6 years, bro. I'll take your back. I'll sink my hooks in. Third hook.
His visual is disgusting right now. This
why?
Is,
why do we even do that?
I was hungry.
Why do we even go
not
there?
Anymore. Not anymore. Hey, bottles of wine, dude. What's up?
All
where
right.
did you? Who's shipping wine to
yeah,
us?
Yeah, what's the guy's name? It's Nine String.
Yeah.
What's his Instagram? We got to give him a shout out.
Nine String guitarist.
Can you find that?
I'll find it.
Dude hooked us up with a couple of bottles of wine. I haven't tasted them yet, but they look beautiful. He just did it because he likes the show. I mean, just a great guy.
It's Nine String Man.
Yeah.
So,
by the way, how does his hand not light fire when he's playing the guitar?
Gianelli right? Vineyards.
Have you watched any of his videos?
Gianelli?
Yeah, Gianelli Vineyards.
Gianelli?
Yeah.
Gianelli?
Dude, you got it.
The guy just flies on the guitar. It's
flies,
crazy.
Bro.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Tuolumne County. This is, I'm from Tuolumne County up there. I wonder where he's at.
Why are you putting the wine next to you?
I know. Like he's
you see how he just
home.
Fucking
yeah,
sharked
see
that?
How he just, like absorbed that. Please.
Like
you know what? What did it say on the box, Doug? Whose name was on the box?
Mike.
Sal. It was me. I'm getting drunk.
My name.
Do you guys ever say something super inappropriate in the gym to yourself, but it's a little too loud?
I don't really talk to myself that often.
Oh. This happened to me the other day. Someone came in and they were like, oh, the sprinklers got me all wet. And I was like, kind of under my breath, but too many people heard. It's like, wow, the weirdest things that you turned on. So inappropriate.
just in one of those
you gotta
moods.
Say it louder, man.
Huh?
Yeah.
It's just super inappropriate.
What were you doing? You were in the gym with your headphones on or what?
No, I was just training clients.
Because I've done that before.
Super unprofessional. I was training clients, dude. It's stupid.
Did you guys
train today?
Yes.
Not yet.
Yeah. You did?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Wow. Before this. What'd you hit?
Deads and overhead press.
You're starting to deadlift hardcore now, huh?
I am. Secretly.
Sorry.
Yeah, because you guys
sorry.
Let me build up. Yeah, yeah in
I'm
peace.
I'm going the other way. I've laid off of them for 2 weeks. I'm not going to deadlift for a while now.
Is it because you missed that lift? So you figured now you've got to back off?
I'd been overdoing it, and especially overdoing it heavy. So I'm gonna back off completely. I'd still.
But what are your signs though for the listeners? Because I'm sure people think like, well, how do you know?
Yeah. So one of the things, you know, before we all got together, I was never a guy who ever lifted in that singles, doubles, or triples. I never trained that way. And man, when I first went through MAPS Red, you know, I had the same experience that a lot of these guys that are just now getting into our program and stuff had too was. And that's why I feel so passionate about it, man. When I first went through it, I thought, holy shit, as much as I know, as much as I've been doing for this, you know, I couldn't believe how much my body had changed for that. So, you know, I too get addicted to that and was, you know, spending a lot of time in phase one or, you know, in the mentality of doing singles and doubles and triples
you
a lot.
You phase out of it?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of would, but I would phase right back in. So yeah. I would do it into just enough, you know, so I'm still getting the benefits of adaptation and stuff like that. But then, what would happen to me is, you know, I'm doing so much. I went from the guy who did everything in the gym to the guy now who is doing like all barbell movements. Like everything was a barbell movement. And there's a lot of benefit to that. And then there's certain things that you got to be careful of when you do that, because you're still holding on to a straight bar and our joints don't necessarily move that way. And it's not the most optimal position all the time for everything that we do.
Right. This is why I like kettlebells, you know.
Yeah,
it's a nice change of pace.
Well, it's your foundation, but it shouldn't be your everything.
Right.
And I'm right now as an example of somebody who was making it their everything, to where I wasn't doing anything else really but all these big compound movements and training a lot more similar to a power lifter type of program. And what I noticed was, you know, because I was chasing PRs a lot, well, I'm really good about switching my hand grip. So I start always on deadlifts with overhand until I can't no longer grip overhand, which is normally about
135.
I can go overhand all up till 315. And then after I increase, so once I go above 350, I start, you know, a power grip or over underhand grip, whatever you want to call that. And once I get up that high, especially when I'm going for singles, doubles, or triples, I'm always using my dominant grip.
Of course.
And it has now created an imbalance on my right side. And my stubborn ass, I felt it. I knew when it was coming and I still neglected it and kept doing it because I was still chasing PRs. And, you know, this kind of goes back into the topic that we had recently with, you know, Nate Strickler on the forum, and why I thought it was such a good post that he did. And it was good for all of us to kind of think about this, because even myself, you know, I'm somebody who, you know, knows better, and I still get myself chasing after a number or wanting to see myself increase in strength. And, you know, because of that, and I was seeing the gains. So, you know, of course I was saying like, oh, I'll worry about it later. And it's caused a major problem for me. It's caused such a problem that the imbalance on my back, you know, rolls over into my shoulder, and then now has caused this radiating, you know, pain down into my elbows. And, you know, I've done some.
So does that start to flare up? Is that when you decide, okay, I need to back off?
Yeah. So I've completely. So now, like every day before I come in, and a lot of it, it is my right. It's just the position of my shoulder right now. Right. So, you know, I've got, it's part of my traps and rhomboids are not firing properly or not getting me in a completely retracted position and depressing my shoulder. So now what I'll do is when I first start a workout, it doesn't matter what I'm doing that day, I always start off with light seated rows right now. So I'll do light seated rows and I row in and retract and depress the shoulders, hold for 2 or 3 seconds to come out. And I do like 15, 20 reps. I do a good 3 to 4 sets. That's how I start every workout now. And then a lot of the stuff I'm doing now is a lot of unilateral movements. So a lot of emphasis on form. So, and I'm in high reps, 12, 15 reps.
Mm-hmm.
I guess this is a good topic. I didn't even think about that. We haven't discussed it. I'm glad you made me bring this up, because I think it is something that a lot of listeners should hear and don't really think about, because we create these programs. And one of the things that we were really hesitant about when we put a program out there was, you know, we're so anti cookie cutter anything. And, you know, it's really learning about individualizing things for you and learning to read your body. And this is an example of how I'm not following maps to a T. You know, like even though this is our program, it's our foundation, you know, I now have a new issue going on with my body that now takes a priority. So even though yesterday was a foundational day and these are the exercises I would normally be following, I don't follow that protocol whatsoever. Now the priority is getting these muscles to fire correctly and get myself back into proper alignment and fix myself. So that's where now a lot of the, you know, unilateral movements now are getting incorporated. That's why I now do the seated row four. And that's why I've completely eliminated deadlifts completely out of my workouts right now. And I'm just replacing them. And it's like, you know, for me, it's only been 2 weeks. And I know once I start feeling really good, I'll reintroduce them and I'll start with a lighter weight and really focus on the retraction of my shoulders before I pull up. And
yeah, one thing for me I notice is if I'm training too heavy for too long, is I notice my joints start to get sore. Mm-hmm. Not like I hurt my joints, but they just start to feel stiff and sore and I have to warm up longer before my workouts. And that's when I know, like, it's time to back out, even if I'm only in a strength phase for a short period of time. And as far as the deadlift is concerned, one thing you should practice that I've been doing is I go double overhand grip till I get to 405. Then I go hook grip until I get to about 500, and then I go alternate. And I'm trying to get to the point where I can do hook grip up until my max, which it takes practice. But I've seen Lane Norton do it all the time, and I'm like,
is that something you've done, you know, previously? Like, or is this something new that you've?
I just started incorporating hook grip. Maybe
I still don't know how to do that.
Maybe months ago. I mean, hook grip. Literally, you just wrap your.
It hurts to me, man.
You wrap your index finger around your thumb, squeeze the bar, and lift. And here's the thing: I can do it now, and it doesn't really hurt. But I'm still not as strong as I am when I do alternate grip. So I'm trying to get it to the point where I'm as strong as I am alternate grip. So I would prefer to use a hook grip all the time, because then I don't have to worry about alternating.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, like my strongest alternate grip is my right hand supinated, left hand pronated.
Yeah.
If I switch it, I'm pretty strong, but then you know where I start to feel the strain? My left bicep. Mm. Because my left arm is not used to holding on to that much weight
isometric
in a
tension,
supinated
and that's what's caused this whole it goes all the way from my bicep it's now affected. I can't do curls. I haven't done bicep curls. Like if I do, it's like total.
I was just gonna ask you, like, why are your arm so small?
It's total like rehab.
Being sarcastic, because if you see his arms, like, you're not doing curls, go fuck yourself.
No, I haven't done any. I haven't done any arms really. I mean, I've done a little bit of tricep work, and then the bicep stuff. I'm doing like Zottman curls, and I'm doing things that are more therapeutic to what. And I'm like super lightweight, super lightweight, and it's fucking rough, man. It hurts because I'm super tight, and I know it all. It's all from the deadlift. Because when I worked backwards, right? When I first it first showed up in my elbow, right? I started noticing the pain in my elbow, and then how hard it was for me to flex. When I went to flex my bicep, I just had this sharp pain, and it really hurt to internally rotate my wrist. So I was like, okay,
where a lot of people they'll keep doing the same thing and try and work their way through it. Which I think the message there from like. As far as like paying attention to those signals in the body telling you that, like, okay, you've been doing this for a while, like you're gonna feel some sort of revolt. Like there, for me too, I can totally tell, you know, certain parts of my body now almost like knot up and get really tense and achy, and I pay attention to that now. Like I'm foam rolling this a lot, or I'm doing an excessive amount of, you know, dynamic warm up for this, whereas I should be. And then you can also notice like what other parts of your body feel like you haven't really, you know, given proper attention in a while too. Mm-hmm. So you just got to naturally sort of shift into that. But that's all intuitive.
Yeah. And that's the part that I think, I mean, this is why I love the forum is, you know, we highly encourage everybody that, you know, that's going through the program that, you know, you have a place like that where, you know, you have other people going through the problem. You have other people that have, you know, may have been experiencing the same thing that you're going through, whether it be aches or pains, or, you know, you're noticing little things that are happening with your body, because it's inevitable. Everybody's going to have their thing. The thing is that everyone's different, and that's what is so hard about creating an online program is being able to provide people what they truly need.
Yeah.
Not only providing you the best program. I feel like we put all this, you know, we've put a lot of work into, you know, program designing this, that it's as far as results and showing you more results than anything out there. And it's designed to, you know, progressively overload. It's phased out correctly.
When we try to choose like the most optimal way to do it. So you have one directional pathway to get there that we feel collectively is probably the most optimal way to do it. However, you know, there's lots of flexibility and room, you know, to accommodate, you know, various variables out there, right? Yeah. So we have to do that.
Well, what do we always say? You know, if first time through one of our programs, follow it the way we have it laid out, and then afterwards start to modify. I want to give a shout out to one of our forum members. He is an example of what happens when you combine good genes and good exercise programming. I'm talking about Timony.
Yeah.
His squat went up.
His back looks ridiculous.
His squat went up in 3 weeks. So he did first time MAPS Red, very experienced. He does, you know, he did body part splits before, but he's not new to the game at all. This guy's been working out for a long time. Very, very muscular guy. His squat went up 65 pounds. And for those people listening right now who are like, you're full of shit, Sal. Nope, it's true. He posted videos.
Yeah.
His squat went up 65 pounds of proof. But he's got ridiculous. I mean, he has a lot of muscle, great genes, and it's just new programming for him. So it's just like the perfect storm.
Yeah. Right.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah, no, for sure. Oh my God.
It's here.
It's fast. Wow. Oh, it's the motherfucking quaw.
Oh, that eagle has landed.
Quee quaw. I'm trying to get my own thing. I can't.
Yeah, yeah. We had the magic.
You got your thing.
We banned yours. That a while ago, dude.
Yeah, like, but
come
I'm trying.
On. I came up with a new one after since then.
Oh, man.
All right. We're going to help you out. Forward, everyone. Redhead Ken, is it necessary to take a week off of training every once in a while?
So the way he asks the question, is it necessary? Nope. Is it a good idea sometimes? Maybe. Depends on the individual.
Right.
Rather than taking a week off, I typically recommend doing something different, or training very easy or light,
yeah,
or lowering the intensity, or like Justin said, you're trying some different movements. That would be a great idea. Taking a full week off, if you're a competitor, for example, and you really push your body to the limit and you just finished a competition, then it would probably be a good idea to take a week off. If you're an athlete and you just finished the season and you barely, you know, made it out without any injuries and you just busted your ass, it might be a good idea, right, to take a week off.
Even then you could really dive
deload
into mobility or yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
So. I've had a handful of clients in my lifetime that I've actually told that you need to take a day off, that you need to take a week off the gym. Like you need to
it's
just,
pretty rare.
Yeah. It's normally those that were like, that are highly addicted to the exercise. Someone who I know is like,
that's a good point. They're taking psychological.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly. So if I got somebody who I find is addicted to the workouts and, which I know some people are probably thinking that's fucking crazy, but there's people like that. It's a small percentage.
Adam makes a great point because there's two reasons for that. And I correct me if I'm wrong. Reason one is to get their body to like recover a little bit. Reason two is to break that psychological addiction.
Yeah.
Like take a week off and let's get you there first before we, mm-hmm, because when you're dealing with someone who's addicted to exercise, it's no different than any other addiction. And if you don't deal with that root addiction, you're in for an uphill battle.
Yeah.
And that's a great way to break that addiction is to tell them, you know. It reminds me of, God, I can't believe I didn't bring this up earlier. We were just talking about this yesterday, you know, when it comes to food addiction and some of the ways that we talk to people, especially when you deal with someone who's really addicted to food, how you deal with them, you know, breaking that addiction, and the way that the, you know, medical community tries to treat it has nothing to do with the addiction. It just has everything to do with the symptom.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about that procedure that the FDA just approved that I sent you guys.
That's right.
Do you guys remember that?
Yeah, that's crazy to me.
It's not just crazy. It's disgusting.
Yeah.
And I don't mean it's disgusting because I look at it and it's gross. It's disgusting that we would actually approve and then have doctors recommend this procedure. The name of it, what was the name of it? It was called, let me see. When you guys find that for me, because I want to make sure I give it the right. You know,
well,
you
send it over to our group text, so it's in the go to your details on the group text.
Yeah. So basically, I call it surgical bulimia, but what they do is they insert a.
I thought it was a joke at first.
No, it's not.
I thought there's no way that.
Yeah, they would approve of that.
No, they insert a tube into this person's stomach. The person eats dinner and then goes in the bathroom afterwards and empties the contents of their stomach out into the toilet. So it's no different than bulimia. You're totally not dealing with the addiction whatsoever.
Oh, no.
And so...
It's exactly what it is. You just, instead of you're forcing yourself to throw up, you just get to suck it out.
You know what this is going to do? This will only encourage more binge eating. It's going to encourage worse and worse habits.
Of course.
It's a horrible idea.
And of course the FDA would approve it. More food you're buying, more consumption and shit. Just more shit we're tied into.
It's disgusting.
It's all working together.
Oh, yeah, dude, I mean, when you're dealing with an addiction, whether it be exercise or food, you do have to deal with the addiction. So I think someone's coming to you as a trainer and you're a trainer and they're just addicted to exercise and it's not good for them.
Uh-huh.
That is great advice. Like what Adam says, make them take a week off, like break that for a second. What's it called? What does that say?
Aspire.
Procedure is called
Aspire Assist.
Aspire Assist. I'm not making it up. FDA approved surgical bulimia. Disgusting.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Horrible.
Next question, please, Doug.
He's like, I was just
Doug was
relaxing.
Yeah, I was just taking a nap. Andy Clark, PT, can you bulk and build muscle while intermittent fasting?
Absolutely.
You definitely can.
I find it super beneficial.
You can. And remember, fasting is really just a period of time without food. So you could have your first meal of the day be at 2 p.m., And then you can eat three or four really large meals before you go to bed, right?
Yeah, you can still achieve a surplus, you know, it's just based off of the timing of it. So if you're like, you know, stretching your day out for a long period of time, then you had like a smaller window of eating opportunity, you know, you could still maintain like a surplus, obviously, to, you know, to gain. But most people, I think of intermittent fasting as like just for, you know, cutting down and leaning out and all that kind of stuff, which it works awesome for that, which is what I tend to use it for more. But
I use it a lot in bulking.
Yeah.
I fucking love it. I think, you know, here's the thing you have to get out of it. And, you know, if Sal's touched on this a few times, is this like, you know, you fast for one day, like that doesn't like dictate like you building or not building a muscle over a period of a week or 2 months or what like that. Like our bodies don't work on this 24-hour clock. So, you know, if you had, you know, 5,000 calories on Monday and on Thursday you have 6,500 again, like you having a 2,000 calorie on Tuesday ain't going to make you lose fucking 5 pounds. It ain't going to do anything. If anything, it'll help clean some, you know, help, you know, drop down some.
Process everything better and everything.
Yeah. So I like, that's exactly how I'll handle it. Like I'll be on like that, like I'm on a gain, right? I'm on a surplus. And, you know, I'm always, it's never precise, right? So there's never like this perfect, like, I eat exactly 500 calories above my maintenance every single day while I'm on a bulk. Like, you know, it's even when you're tracking, it's still approximate because of your movement and your exercise and, you know, your stress. And there's so many of these factors come in. So I'm always looking at my body and feeling my body. And if I've been going for like 5-6 days and I'm living in this surplus and I feel like, you know what, I don't feel like all of that surplus is going just to building muscle. It feels like I might be holding a little bit extra than I need. And then that's a perfect time to throw an intermittent fast. I'll throw an intermittent fast and then I'll go right back into my surplus again. Mm-hmm. And I also noticed, and this is completely anecdotal. I don't have any science to back this up, but man, after I'm in a bulk and then I go back into a fast and I go right back into bulk again, I feel like it totally makes my body super sensitive to the food and everything. Wow. When I consume.
It's amazing you said that because we're splitting hairs here, but science is now showing that fasting improves insulin sensitivity. So you'll use your insulin in a more anabolic way when you do eat. And there is something called protein sensitivity, which is being shown and demonstrated in certain studies, in which constant feeding of protein throughout the day actually reduces,
desensitizes
your body to protein to where it's going to use more of it for energy and less of it for mm-hmm. building and repair. When you fast, let's say I eat 200 grams of protein, but I do a fast that day and then I eat 200 grams of protein from 2 p.m. and on versus 200 grams of protein, you know, an 8 meal starting at 8 a.m. all the way through, the fasted side will have better utilization of the protein for muscle. Mm-hmm. So it might be splitting hairs, but you know, it's funny you said that, Adam, because you didn't even know that, right? And you did that.
No,
and you noticed
it. Well, to me, it kind of makes like for what I do understand, it just kind of makes logical sense to me, right? If we looked at our you know, our body converts food over into, you know, glucose, right? So we convert over our carbohydrates over into glucose. You fill up your gas tank, right? So, and if you fill your gas tank up, and you're always kind of like, you let the gas tank go half full, then you fill it up again half full, and you're never really letting it go completely empty. I feel like it's the body almost gets oversaturated with whatever it is that you're consuming. So to take it all the way, take it completely away, and then you feed it, it's like right away, everything that you get, it's going to go to the places it really needs, right? So I feel like that just makes logical sense to me that if I deprive it a little bit, you know, for a short period of time, like a small fasting window, 17 hours or so, and then I decide to fuel it again, a good majority of those calories I feel are going to get partitioned to the places I want it to go. Right. Does that make sense versus me over-consuming and wondering, well, did that all go to building muscle or did some of that possibly go to adding fat to my body?
Well, look at protein. Look at the uses of protein in the body. Among them are energy. And believe it or not, those of you who are eating a shit ton of protein, most of it's getting turned into energy. And then the second thing is, you know, tissue repair. Amino acids are found only in proteins. Well, if I'm constantly feeding my body protein throughout the day, it's going to use a lot of it for energy. If I feed it a little bit less frequently, what they're finding is I'm using more of it for that repair because maybe you're sending your body the signal that, hey, I'm not getting protein super regularly all the time.
Right.
And really,
now I got it. I need it. I can use all of it.
And protein is really the only thing that can do some of the tissue repair. Right. But a lot of your other macros can provide energy as well. So does that kind of make sense? So your body will use that protein for what it needs it for. And fasting has been shown to increase protein sensitivity, which is why super frequent eating may just make you utilize protein in a less efficient way. So you might even get away with less protein, which is good, by the way. Those of you listening are like, I don't want... No, that's a good thing. You would. It would be great if you could get away with eating less protein and build as much muscle, because it's less strain on the body. You know, too high a protein intake can stimulate things that can cause, you know, detrimental health effects. So if you could get away with less of it and get the same results, then that's great. Saves money. You know, you could get the other macronutrients in for your calories, like your fats and carbs, which have other things that are important for you. So, yeah, fasting and bulking go great together. And the way I do it when I bulk is I just fast until about 1 p.m. and then I have, you know, my excess calories throughout the day.
Fit Chris 86. Why do so many athletes blow out their hamstrings?
That seems to be a common injury. It's a pretty common injury, yeah, isn't it?
I'm sure. Baseball player running to first base, yeah, blowing it out, or just a wide
decelerating,
receiver.
Decelerating, stopping all your momentum going forward, you know, lots of stuff.
Like, well, isn't it too that?
Let me ask you this. I don't know if I've seen any science on this, but I assume that the blowout in the hamstring comes from the hamstring lengthening at a rapid pace rather than contracting at a rapid pace. Mm. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
So not when the person's
that makes more sense.
Necessarily kicking back, but when they're reaching forward and they're changing directions. Does that make sense? Like kick, boom, and then try to change directions?
Well, most studies that I've seen, it's more of this. It's that most people, and especially athletes, have got over dominant quads.
Right.
And they say it should be at least an 80-40 ratio, I think. Is that
the same?
I think, I can't remember. It's been a long time since I've read that or not, but I know it's like
60-40.
Maybe it's 60-40. Yeah. So,
yeah, that's probably.
No. Like, as far as like the percentage of like your max load that you can do on each, they should be that closely related. Okay. I can't remember what the percentage were, but in most cases, they're so quad dominant and your quads are so powerful that they're powering you through the run so quick that the hamstring can't keep up.
Well, I think that they actually overdevelop their quads in the gym, because like most of the training regimens, like all these sports teams do, like everything is so focused on the interior chain as opposed to the posterior chain. So, I mean, squats is basically like the only thing that I really could say that legitimately I was working my...
Right, and most like football players don't even do deadlifts.
No deadlifts. You know, we're not doing pull-ups. You know, we're not doing any kind of pulling move. Like, there was no balance there.
Well, because when I'm thinking of a blown hamstring, I'm thinking of running. Okay, because I figure running is probably where you're going to blow your hamstring the most, right?
Right.
When I'm thinking of running, I'm thinking of... full extent, like you're moving forward, extending the knee, right? Yeah. You're hitting the ground and then you're going hip extension. So it's this change of directions.
Yeah.
And I'm requiring a lot of power to change directions from extension to, from flexion to, or extension to flexion of the knee. And if my hamstring A lacks the functional flexibility to contract with full force at this wide, you know, where it's stretched out.
Well, what you're saying makes sense, because like most injuries I've seen, you know, with the hamstring is off of the start off, right?
Yeah.
So if I'm sprinting, or if I'm like in a position where
they boom,
ready, set, go, you know, I'm into full extension and it's rapidly getting that like full length where like it's not ready for that type of a force.
Right. I think your best bet to prevent hamstring pulls or blowouts or strain, A, make them stronger, but B, make them functionally more flexible. And what I mean by that is you don't want to just stretch your hamstrings, because that gives them more range of motion, but it doesn't give them more strength within that range of motion. So if I have these really hyper-flexible hamstrings and I'm running and moving in that new range of motion, but I don't have strength within that range of motion, then I've only created more instability and potential injury. So what you want to do is you want to be able to make them strong within a new range of motion. A great exercise for that would be just a good old-fashioned, you know, Romanian deadlift, where you really are challenging, you're staying within, you know, your spine, you're keeping your spine in the same position, and you're hip hinging, and you're really trying to increase the length of your hamstrings, but you have load. So you're making them really strong at full, full extension. Then when you go run, they're strong within that.
You work up to doing those explosively. So you start off like doing that. That's going to strengthen them, and then you start doing an explosive, because I would think you would want to mirror that. I think that's what a big part of it is, that you got these quads that take off and explode, and it's just the hamstring just cannot keep up. It's not as responsive as the quadricep is, because you've done all this jump boxes and explosive movements and sprints and everything like that. Everyone's pushing off with their quads that their hamstrings aren't developed. By the way, doing some speed pulls would be phenomenal.
Which part of the, I have no idea what the answer is to this, but which part of the hamstring is more likely to tear? Is it the leg bicep, or is it the more the hip extending part of the hamstring?
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think the leg bicep would be as prone to tear. I don't know. I'm completely speculating here.
Yeah,
I would think it would be more the hip extension. And I'm wondering if having really strong glutes, really strong quads, and weak hamstrings would also contribute to hamstring blowouts, because your glutes could be really powerful.
Overpowerful.
And super powerful. Hamstrings are trying to stabilize the knee.
Yeah.
And, you know, you take off and then boom. You pull a hamstring.
Yeah, it really is. Like, it's that dominance from any one of the other adjacent muscles. I think that if it's overpowering the force, like, I'm sure that's an issue. That's why you have to have some sort of balance there, you know, in each of their responsibilities.
It's funny because if you're trying to do a max load lift, your body has pretty good safeguards and will limit you based upon some of your weakest links. But when you're doing explosive movements, sometimes you can overload those safeguards because you move so quickly that weak muscle has to try to support those strong muscles, and then you get pulls. This is why you could take bodybuilders or powerlifters who have really strong shoulders and bench press and deadlift and rows, and then have them throw a baseball or swing a punch fast.
Yeah.
And a lot of them hurt their shoulder because the muscles that stabilize the humerus can't support the powerful muscles that they use to bench press and row and do all that stuff. So this is all about imbalances. And I tell you what,
this is also why performance is so important, is that, you know, when it's a perfect example of what, even to someone like me, like, I trained in this bodybuilder mentality for...
You're talking about MAPS performance?
Yeah. You know, for 2 years, I was, you know, so aesthetic driven that I totally neglected movements like that. Then I go out and I want to do something so basic, like throw a frisbee or a baseball or shoot a basketball. And, you know, not only is my form awful, but it doesn't feel right. And, you know, if you try and do that, and if you actually try and do that competitively, that's where injury is like scream. I mean,
you just have no support in that movement because, you know, you haven't been doing it. So, you know, the recruitment pattern isn't there. And then, you know, B, you're dominant, like so dominant in other parts of that movement to where it's not working together. And so, you know, it's really connecting everything in the kinetic chain. Like, that's what performance is, just trying to get your body to communicate like in its entirety way better.
Yeah, it will benefit you when you go back to training like a meathead.
That's why it amplifies the signals.
That's why I wanted to bring that up, because I feel like people don't. I mean, I think a lot of people stray away from that program because they think that, you know, I'm more about aesthetics, or I want to look a certain way or whatever like that. And I'm like, you got to understand that they work hand in hand. You know, one doesn't go without the other. They're both super important. You may spend more of your time hanging out with MAPS Black, but MAPS Green needs to be a priority somewhere into your routine at one point. Otherwise, you're looking for injuries, or you're looking for issues long term.
Well, I'll never forget, man. I had my mind blown. You know, you guys know I used to train in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and so I'd grapple with. And then on the weekends, they'd have open mat, and we'd go there and we'd do no gi. And sometimes guys would come in that weren't necessarily jiu-jitsu guys. They were wrestlers, but they're trying to learn jiu-jitsu, whatever. And there was this guy that came in, and he was, you know, at the time I was probably 29, and I'm strong. I'm a strong 29-year-old. And this guy was like 45-year-old man. I probably outweighed him by about 15 pounds. So I wasn't way bigger than him, but I was definitely bigger than him. And when we would grapple, you know, he was very technical. So was I. However, he just felt so fucking strong. Like, I couldn't believe how strong he physically felt. And I was much more muscular than him. We ended up working out together at the gym, and I was surprised at how much stronger I was in the gym. Like, I could lift way more than him in the gym. But yet when we would grapple, he felt like as strong as I was in terms of, I couldn't overpower him in no way. And it wasn't his technique, because we were both very technical. And I realized it was because he could use his strength so well. And see, that's what a program like MAPS Performance does, is, you know, for those of you who just want to be strong, I'll just do red, or just want to be aesthetic, I'll just MAPS aesthetic. Using your strength very well contributes to all that shit,
right?
You know, because then you take that, you know, you take a guy like that and you go train him in the gym, then like a bodybuilder, and he's going to look fucking amazing, and he can use it well, you know.
Yeah, specialize that strength
exactly.
Diary of a Fit Guy When starting a business, should you over-prepare before starting or just jump in?
No, you're asking us? I don't know.
I already know the answer of everybody. I just want to hear everybody say it.
Doug, let me ask you this.
One, two, three, jump!
Doug, let me ask you this, because when we first started working together, we used to call me what, like hip slinger?
Hip shooter.
It's the more I run into a lot of, and I know a lot of entrepreneurs.
Air humper.
And some of them are big planners, and some of them are just like, I'm a fucking jump in kind of guy. I'm disorganized as shit anyway. If I sat down and tried to prepare, it'll never happen. I'm better off just fucking, you know, let's go, jump off the cliff and make the parachute on the way down type of thing. And I tend to operate best that way. I don't know if it's the smartest way to go. For me, it works well. Luckily, I partnered with Doug, who is a preparer. He understands how to prepare, and so I think they both have their benefit. But yeah, I don't know, man. What would I recommend? Shit, if I were to recommend the average person, I would say prepare, because you're either the kind of person that can jump in and do it, or you're not. I don't know how you would teach someone to do that. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know.
Yeah, we're. We're probably not the best to give the advice on this, just because that we're all going to say that.
Or are we?
Well, you know, you're right. That's a good point.
I feel like we always say that, but I feel like you need that.
Yeah, you're right. And here's my perspective. 10 years when I worked for 24 Hour Fitness, 8 of those 10 years I spent, you know, managing trainers. And basically your main job as a trainer is to help them, is business development. Is teaching them how to create their own business. Even though they're working for a company, I'm teaching these guys how to build a business. So, and most certainly I had all personalities as far as these types of people. And, you know, there's two extremes, right? You have the person who just dives in, like no planning whatsoever, and they go after it. Then you have the person who is, you know, plans every little detail out, and, you know, I see paralysis by analysis. So you've got these two things, right? So you either turn into the person who, you know, dives in and just goes after it. And those people, and kind of like Sal was saying, you kind of either have it or you don't. Just because someone dives into it right on doesn't mean you got what it takes to be that person. Mm-hmm. I think those people, you have to be okay with failing. You have to accept, and you're going to fail more if you're that person, right?
You have to be okay with chaos.
Yeah, you have to be okay with that. You have to be able to accept that your brilliant idea or your brilliant plan could mold and shape and change 10 different ways because of your approach, because you decided you're just going to dive right in. You can't be so headstrong on this.
You
is how
be a lot more flexible.
You have to be way more flexible that way versus the other person who is like over planning, and they have thought every little detail of this business and to down to the color of their logo and how important that is. And they've done all kinds of analysis on everything. And they're like, this is the pathway I need to go. And I've seen both be extremely successful. So there is a way to win in both camps. Personally, I think having a little bit of both is awesome. I strive to be that person. I definitely probably am more like Sal, where I am definitely a hip shooter. But there is a part of me that I try and see, four or five steps ahead of where we currently are. But, you know, fuck, man. For me, I think diving in. I'd rather dive in and learn. Because how many times have you guys dove into a business and, you know, even though that business, you know, didn't work out, it led you to something else.
Mm-hmm. Every time.
And if you didn't dive into it, to that failing, soon to be failing, and if you were one of those people who are like studied it to death and realized like after 6 months of, you know, planning it, you realize like, oh, this isn't a good idea, I'm not going to do it, or change your mind, you may never have got that opportunity to have, you know, found a new business or a new direction because you were trial and error, you know? So, you know,
Here's the other part too, is like if you're not the kind of person, look, if the three of us, including Doug, and I say Doug is a preparer, but he's really, compared to the average person, he's a jump in person too. He's just a preparer compared to us. Okay.
Well, I mean, Doug and I'm kind of somewhere in between both of you guys and Doug, you know, like I have this sort of weird, I mean, it would look a lot like yin yang, sort of like I have like two polar driving forces. Like, so one of them too, like right now I have another company. I'm trying to work out this this invention. I've had this idea forever. I just decided, you know, but the hip shooter in me is like, boom, let's fucking do this. It's a great idea. I'm going to do this. And now it's like, you know, am I going to launch it right away? No way in hell. I'm doing all my research. You know, I'm very meticulous with you know, the very last detail of it. You know, it's like once I'm in, I'm like, I think I'm more, I'm more like Doug once I'm in.
Yeah.
But, you know, initially I'm like, yeah. And then I'm like, oh my God, what I get myself into. Just like Mind Pump.
Well, what I was just going to say is if we weren't the kind of guys that just jumped in, if we weren't those kind of hip shooters, Mind Pump probably wouldn't exist.
Yeah.
None of us in this room knew a goddamn thing about podcasting. Nothing. We knew very little. Doug had equipment. He had some equipment. He liked to do, you know, video and photo and stuff. But none of us had ever done a podcast. None of us had ever done any of this stuff. None of us ever talked on radio. We'd never. So if we weren't the guys that kind of jumped in and did things, and we sat down and we said, okay, guys, let's think about this. Let's look at a podcast. What are the logistics? Wow, we need to get this many downloads. How are we going to get traction? We don't know anybody.
We are a grain of salt.
We would have not done it. Yeah. We would have said, you know what? I don't know if we can do this, guys. This is not going to work. The odds are too big. The odds are against us. Let's go open up a gym or do something a little more standard. So I think there's some benefit into having the attitude of the jump in, because the people that jump in, they got the crazy ideas. They're the ones that do shit that, you know, look at, you know...
We talked about the TED Talk, that the number one, you know, that they did one of these TED Talks we watched was excellent. Talked about
timing.
The five top reasons why a business is successful. And the number one was timing. So if you got an idea, you have a business thing that you want to do. Most businesses, or not most, in this case, you know, the studies that they did were, you know, the number one reason they were successful was the timing. It was not because it was the most organized or had the pretty logo or they put a lot of money into advertising and marketing.
Which I'm sure they all got way better as they're going. But
absolutely.
The point is they started.
Yep, exactly. And a lot of times, if you got an idea, you have something you want to do, every day that goes by that you're not doing it, I mean, you're hurting your business. That's the way I look at it. I look at it like, once I've committed in my mind, it's something that I want to do. Every day that I'm not doing it, I'm losing money and I'm you know, losing opportunity. Right?
I swear, there's times where I wish I wasn't that kind of person, because it causes me a shit ton of stress. Like, if I'm gonna write something, I need to be inspired, and then in 10 minutes I'll pump out 3 pages. If I'm gonna come up with an idea, I can't force it. It just needs to happen. When I first opened my gym, I left 24 Fitness. I went into banking because I was like, what am I going to do? I'm going to get, you know, learn how to do investments. I literally went to lunch, went next door while I was waiting for my food. Oh, there's a gym in here. Talked to the person who owned the facility. She said, I'm looking for trainers to rent this out. Quit my job at the bank and started my personal training business. Then when I wanted a new spot, I was looking around, couldn't find one. Saw one. The landlord said, you know, I need this done, but someone might sign the lease tomorrow, whatever. Boom, took it that day. I mean, It's extremely stressful. It makes me, sometimes I wish I wasn't this way, but I can't change it. So I think if you're one of those people that jumps in, you're just one of those people that jumps in. I don't think it's strategy. You know what I mean? I think it's a strategy you could train someone and teach someone to do. Yeah. You kind of just are that kind of person.
I think go with your instinct.
Personally, in my experience, I dealt with more of the opposite. And I would always rather have, you know, manage a personality like yours. I'd rather have somebody that I got to corral back or help direct and say, yeah, that's a great idea, Sal, but, you know, let's aim this way. Or or like, hey, bro.
If I had a dollar, like, heard that.
We have never heard that.
Yeah, right. So, you know, I would much rather have that with somebody than somebody who I'm trying to like jumpstart and like who's sitting there and looking at all the things that could go wrong. Like, I'm such a firm believer too in like having a positive mentality and thought process. And if you're already saying to yourself that, like I remember some people would be like, oh, well, only like 15% of podcasts actually make any money doing this. Or, oh, you only personal training, there's only a 20% chance. People give you all these bad numbers, and it's just like you start taking all this stuff and you start like
closing themselves out of it.
Yeah. You know, like, and that's like podcasting. Like, you know, we had no idea how to fucking do it. And we could have listened to all these podcasters, and we did. We read our books on stuff. And, you know, here's the thing. Like,
after we started.
I believe that. Yeah. I believe that we're going to do something different, you know. And I'm sure there's businesses that are like us out there that we can, there's certain things that we can take or we can learn from maybe their mistakes or some of the things that they did successfully. But I don't want to be like everybody else. I'm not trying to build a business. I want to build my business and our business. And like, I want it to be our baby. And I'm confident in that. And I believe that we'll figure it out. It may not be exactly the way I dreamt it up, you know, 2-3 years ago, but most certainly if I keep pursuing and pushing in that direction, that, you know, and working hard at it, like, it will unfold and I will make it happen. And I believe that these guys are the same way too.
Let me ask you guys a question. Are you guys, when you open up something like a box, right? Are you the type of guy that's going to like read through the instructions right away?
No.
No.
Never read instructions.
No, that says everything.
Yeah. Unless I have to put something together and then I do because
right?
I can't,
like,
I can't
if,
put
like,
shit
you can't
together.
Look at it and figure it out. I might, you know, check it out, but I'm going to figure that shit out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, man, my entire life is that way. And it's extremely stressful. When I look back, I get more stressed out. When I look back, I think to myself, like, what the fuck were you thinking? Like, what made you think you could do that shit? I was 21 years old. I took $100,000, my money. This is money I earned on my own, busting my ass, and I went and bought some fucking gym down in Palm, you know, ownership of some gym down in, you know, Southern California. I had no fucking idea what I was doing. I had managed gyms, but I had no idea. Yeah. I look back and I'm like, dude, you could have lost all that. Like, what were you thinking? But I wasn't. That's just it. It wasn't. I wasn't really thinking. I was more following.
Well, but I agree with what you're talking about with, like, focusing on the positives versus the negatives because, you know, if you're in a situation like that and you're so driven and focused on the positive of it, like you almost like, I mean, every day you're almost manifesting that promise to yourself.
Well, there's a quote. I think, I don't remember what the quote was, but Schwarzenegger, who's just, he's one of my idols and not because of bodybuilding. It's just because of his, you know, what he's done throughout his life and the things he's accomplished. And someone had asked him and said something like, you can't do that. No one's ever done that before. And his response was always like, I would get excited because I realized awesome. I could be the first.
Yes. Yeah.
You know?
And exactly.
Instead of being scared, I get excited. Yeah. You get excited.
Because, wow, no Absolutely. One's ever done that. Wow, I get to be the first one. Yeah. And that is a very, it sounds great. Everybody listening to that's like, oh, that sounds cool. But when I hear something like that, I get this inner, I can't explain it, this boner. Inner excitement. Yeah, I get a boner
inner
in my heart.
Boner.
Yeah, yeah, my heart gets an heart erection. Yeah. And
well, how about this, too? Like, I mean, yeah, every business that I've started, I do this to myself, right? So I always, you know, the way I manage my money, I always have this, you know, nest egg, and then I have money that's I would consider investing, and like, you know, then you have
your hookers and drugs,
yeah, money. Right, yeah, everything's all everything's all sectioned over there. So I'm
separate.
I as chaotic as I am with the way I approach going into a business, I'm you know, when it comes to my money and my numbers, I'm very you know, precise, and I like that stuff. I'm very detailed about it. And I set myself, I set goals for myself and I hold myself accountable and never fails. Every time I get into a new business where I really push all the chips
in, I know what you're gonna say.
Like the best of me comes out when I'm like backed into the corner, when I'm looking at my account. I'm
dude,
like,
I put myself in the corner sometimes on purpose.
That's how, and I feel I do the same thing too, because you know, if you're not somebody, and that's, I guess that's, it goes into this, right? Like, as far as jumping into stuff, like if you don't thrive off of the adversity like that, if you don't see your, cause I think that it's just a natural thing that happens to me. When I get put in a corner like that, the best of me comes out. And if I don't, if I'm not in a corner, then I'm more laxy-daisy about it. I let my talent kind of cruise me through life. And I don't like that part of me. I wish I could change that, but it's true. And I know that when I push myself, back myself into a corner, and I have to succeed, motherfucker, I will find a way. Like, I will find a way.
Well, you're seeking obstacles. You're not trying to look for that complacent sort of pathway, like, which I feel is interesting that, you know, this somehow, like, you know, the American mindset has been like, you know, let's find this 9-to-5 job and then get some kind of like benefits and retirement package and, you know, this and that. Everything was like trying to be as cookie cutter as possible with least resistance, where nobody's challenged. Well, guess what that leads to? Depression. You know what I mean? Like,
we got to be careful. We got to be careful when we say that, though, because a lot of people, that's good advice.
I'm just saying, like, in general.
I know.
Like, I'm not prescribing this to anybody listening. I'm just telling you that, like, that's my experience.
Well, you're talking to the entrepreneur mind. So yeah. I understand that, you know, because we don't want to insult somebody who has a great 9-to-5 job and they make good income. They're happy with what they're doing. By all means, and that's everyone, not definitely entrepreneurship is not for everybody. And these are some of the ways that you decide if you're that person who jumps right into a business or you need to be a planner. You know, if you're not an entrepreneur by heart and you don't know if you're an entrepreneur by heart, yeah, you probably should do some planning before you hop in. Like I knew I was at 15. At 15 years old, my very first job of actually taking a check from somebody out of their hand was me working mowing lawns and me building a little business where we made flyers and business cards and going door to door. And like already I had that mentality as a kid when I could have went and had, you know, your summer, you know, job lease where they or whatever, where the school gives you release and you could go and work some fast food restaurant, or I could have done that. That's what all my friends did, but I didn't do that. Me and a buddy, we decided to start a business, you know, like that was already ingrained in me at a very young age.
It's funny too, because I can identify it so quickly. Like,
oh yeah,
but the advice. Oh yeah, but the advice and the advice I always give people when people ask me is I'm very conservative with my advice, because
because most aren't.
I'm just afraid. I don't want to give someone. I don't want to give someone the impression that this is what you got to do, because I don't know how the fuck I do it half the time. And half the time when I say I'm stressed, I stress myself out. Like I'm telling you, you know, I'm not giving you the full like expression of it. Like it stresses me the fuck out. I lose sleep over it, and it's just the way I am. There's nothing I could do about it. But there's a trainer that started at the gym that I'm working at, and she asked me, you know, what should I? She was personal training at a gym, so she had a regular job, getting her hourly. She had clients, she had healthcare, but she wanted to move over and to be a private contractor and build her business. And you guys know as well as I do, it's very hard to build your contracting business while you're working for another gym. You're just not fully invested.
Yeah.
And so she's like, should I leave that other place? And my advice is very conservative. I'm like, well, try building it and see what happens. Anyway, she's a hustler, man. And she decided, she's like, no, I'm going to leave that gym and I'm going to try this full time. And I'm like, okay. And I'm like setting the stage for her. You're going to have to bust your ass. You're not going to sleep much. You're going to be here all the time. Like you got to be willing to do all this stuff. And she did it, you know, within a month she was full time, which is, That's not the average, you know, person. But like I said, if you're the kind of person that jumps in, you're just that kind of person that jumps in. Mm-hmm. And maybe partner with someone who plans.
Yeah.
Because yeah, I swear to God, if it wasn't for Doug or for Justin, half the shit wouldn't be on paper. We wouldn't have programs that are organized, you know. Just be my, you know, we'd be our ideas floating in the air, and it wouldn't be anywhere.
Sal and I would have to handwrite it and mail it to you.
Yeah.
Oh, you want maps right? Yeah, we'll get on that. We'll go ahead and mail that to you. Should get to you in the next 14 to 15.
Doug puts it into print. This is really how this works, everybody.
Pretty much.
Well, if you want to check out our programs, go to mindpumpmedia.com. We also have testimonials on there. And leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. If you leave us a good review, you might win a free t-shirt. You can also check us out on Instagram at Mind Pump Radio. You can find me at Mind Pump Sal. You can find Adam at Mind Pump Adam and Justin at Mind Pump Justin.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now, plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.